This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Jessamine Stanley locks her arms behind her head, leans backwards, and props her elbows on the soles of her feet. As a yogi, she often finds herself in elaborate positions like headstands and backbends. But Jessamine doesn't fall neatly into the picture of one who practices yoga. She is a self-described fat femme, and her first experience with yoga was anything but enchanting. In fact, she hated it so much she vowed never to down dog again. But years later, she returned to the mat, found yoga challenging, liked the fact that it pushed her beyond her self-imposed limits of physical exertion. Jessamine captured the evolution of her practice with selfies on Instagram and Tumblr and became an instant social media star. She's written a book for the yoga curious of all shapes and sizes. It is called Everybody Yoga. Doing a reading tonight at Quail Ridge Books at 7 o'clock in Raleigh. Going to be teaching a class at Yoga Fest in Raleigh's McKimmon Conference Center Saturday at 10:30. But first, back on this program, welcome back, Jessamine.
It's so good to be back, Frank. Thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure. You're going to have to take us back and retell some of your story. Actually, take us back to that first Bikram yoga class.
Oh,
that's
my gosh.
The real hot room, right? And you sweat a lot.
Yeah. The room is about 104, 105 degrees. And it's so, I mean, even for people who've been practicing it for years, it can be really intense. But for someone who's never done it, it's a very intense experience. And for me, you know, 16 years old, very unathletic. Not really trying to like stretch myself. I thought I was going to die. Like, I thought it was going to be the end of my life. And I was sweating in ways that I could never comprehend. And when I look back at that experience, I'm so grateful for it, because that is why I can understand when people are like, so I tried yoga one time and it was the worst. And I'm like, yo, I feel you. I have been there.
So what brought you back?
Well, I was going through a pretty rough time in my life. I was in graduate school and I just kind of come out of touch with, I could go down the laundry list of reasons, but I had become depressed, as many of us do. And one of my classmates was like, oh my God, try yoga, you'll love it. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I've already tried it once. I know it's not for me. And which is another really common experience. And but she finally got me into it. There was a Groupon pass, so what do you got to lose? And I went and I loved it. It had not changed at all. It was the same, still the same practice, still the same flow, but my needs had opened up so much, and I didn't realize it, but my life, I was just kind of sleepwalking. I was not engaged. I was not trying to tap into anything larger than myself or even trying to see beyond the day to day. And when I was practicing, because it was so hard and because I couldn't do it and because I thought I was going to die, every moment when I didn't and when I survived, it was like a metaphor for life. It was all of those difficult times combined in one experience.
But it's interesting that that's the thing that would bring you to the realization that you're sleepwalking, because all of us are.
Exactly.
All of us are.
Exactly.
But it was some kind of, what was your relationship with your body at the time? Because that's what yoga does. It makes you realize, oh, there's a body here attached to this monkey mind.
And I think that as a larger bodied person, I'd spent much of my life really trying to ignore how my body looks and trying to make it smaller and trying to minimize myself in so many ways. And it wasn't until I started practicing that I started to even acknowledge certain parts of my body, like certain muscles, certain bones. I mean, it's literally like actually noticing that your body is something that you control. And then on top of that, when you start to really feel the breath moving through your body and start to see how this breath is connecting me to everything else in this world, everything that lives needs this. That conversation is why I'm still doing this. It's why I'm so intoxicated.
You write about the difficult relationship you had with your body at that point. And I wonder if there isn't a moment at which coming in contact with a body that you have scorned, that you've really disdained, if there's not an excruciating moment. Or if it's this realization beyond that it transcends that.
You know what I think is that it is always like extremely excruciating to have any kind of really profound connection with your body. And I think that that's why a lot of times we're shocked by how difficult yoga is or how complex and confusing meditation is, because a lot of times when you think about something that's going to be good for you, you assume that it's going to be a happy or a positive experience. And you say like, oh, you know, this is going to feel good. It's going to be fun. My yoga practice is messy. It is dark. It's mostly me crying and sweating and falling down and getting back up again. And that journey is the result of so many things that I internalize from my life. And I see other people doing this. And I see that when you're able to just take the time for yourself, even if it's just 5 minutes, like yeah. It might even be just when you're in the car, maybe like while you're listening to this, you can just like do some simple stretches, close your eyes. Just take a moment to look within yourself, because a lot of times we freak out about stuff and we get totally overwhelmed by things that are not the true cause of our discomfort. Yeah. And the real cause of it is that we are sitting in a place that is so far from that which is and that which we are.
You're trying to become what you may or may not ever should be.
Exactly.
And, or remember what you never were.
Exactly.
And that's an eternal hell of not now.
Exactly.
So, but and so now you find the eternal bliss of now.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent does the practice itself bring you there? And how much of this thought, that all that you just described, mm-hmm. how much of that is something that you come to sort of when you're not on the mat and say, you know what I need to be doing
exactly
here?
I think that a lot of the really profound realizations that I've had are not really when I'm actually practicing yoga. It's you're getting things, you're understanding things, you're learning things about your body, you're coming to these physical conclusions, you're getting stronger, leaner, taller, whatever, all that's happening. But it's not until you don't shout at somebody when you could have, and when you are, you know, just stopping to really observe something, or when you, because I'm the kind of person where like I'm frenetic, like constantly in motion, constantly thinking of new projects and wanting to do new things. And it's not until I'm like really just taking a beat to understand that I don't have to be in motion. I don't have to be crazy. I can just, or not, let me not be ableist and say something that anything's wrong with that. But
But you're saying that being in that moment is okay, that passing judgment is not a requirement.
Exactly.
I don't really have to pass a judgment on you.
Exactly.
I don't really have to, yeah.
In those moments, that's really the practice in action.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not, the time on the mat is amazing. And it is important, but it's not really where the work begins.
You did begin the work. You began to enjoy it. And then you took these selfies and posted them on social media. What was behind that decision?
So I started taking photos of my asana practice because when you practice yoga at home, it can be very isolating. You don't have a teacher that's watching you. And I wanted to receive alignment tips from other people. At the time, Instagram was not that popular. Now it's really popular. But back then, it was just a few serious practitioners, teachers, giving each other feedback. And I wanted to be a part of that. And I wanted to feel like I was a part of a larger community. But I realized that eventually the feedback that I was receiving was not necessarily people saying, oh, cheat your foot out here or strengthen through this arm. It was people being like, I didn't know fat people could do yoga. And I was just thinking, why do you think that fat people can't do yoga? Because there are so many different kinds of people, not just fat people who practice. And after a while, I just was thinking, maybe I'll just continue to do this as a sign of visibility. Like, I can maintain my journal. This is proof for all these people who seem to think it doesn't exist. Now you can see. And I can log my practice. And I think that had I not had that added motivation of being able to be visible, I probably would have stopped posting photos a really long time ago. Because I don't actually think that... I think that social media can make yoga seem way more surface level and narcissistic and superficial than it actually is. And I take a certain amount of responsibility for that, because I think that when I carefully curate my photos and show them in a very specific way, it gives a kind of, it gives the wrong idea to someone who is unfamiliar with the practice. Mm. And to me, the only reason to really maintain the presence and the only reason that I maintain my social media to this day is because I notice that there are not enough representations of what a true 21st century yoga practice looks like, that it's not this like obsession with coconut water and retreats and Lululemon leggings. And Lululemon's always the whipping post. I don't mean to use them that much, but like, you know, this obsession with buying things as a way to make your practice real. And that's so much of what I wanted to communicate in Everybody Yoga, is that the practice is really just, it's what you make of it. It's what you put into it. It's your individual journey. And it's not about making your life into something that it's not. You don't have to buy into that marketing, because it's just marketing ultimately.
Well, that's the most un-yoga thing you can do, is to keep having an aspiration to become something you're not. I mean, if you're constantly doing that, you're really kind of missing the point for
exactly
the day.
And you need to own your truth and really just stand in it. And I think that by showing the messy parts of my life and showing that, you know, I have contradictory opinions, that's the reason to be there.
Well, the other unexpected, and what the marketing doesn't show, or why the marketing gives us an impression of what a yogi should look like, or a yoga practitioner, you're also an African-American woman, and that's unexpected. And you got some pushback on that too, right?
Oh my gosh. I think that it's so awkward whenever you have pushback on that, because it's like, oh, so you thought that black people don't do yoga, is that it? But I mean, at the same time, there's just, because the community has been very homogenous overall, it's hard for us to even, like, as people of color practicing, to even find one another. And as because I feel like I came up in predominantly white yoga communities, and I know a lot of other people who feel this way. And it was not surprising to me that there would be pushback on the internet, because there's pushback in real life. So it's like, you know, whatever. And I know people come into my classes who don't know me, and they see me and they're like, this fat black girl is going to teach me yoga? How's that going to happen? What's that about? And I think that's why that happens, because we are living the American Veda. We are living in the modern yoga. And in modern yoga, we don't have the context of Hinduism. We do not have that background. What we have is Jim Crow South. What we have is race relations that are and so much more than that, but particularly if we're in North Carolina. And someone asked a really good conversation, really good question about this in a talk I did recently, about what does it mean when we start to acknowledge these things, that like there are a lot of white women who teach yoga, and that when black men come to their classes, some of these white women have been taught that black men are predators, you know, and that we have this whole thing in our society with black men as predators. And then where does that leave this human, this beautiful person who just came to practice yoga? And these are the conversations that we really have to start to have with one another. So with the pushback, I'm like, bring it on. Let's talk about it. Let's do it.
And it has generated a conversation. And, you know, you've written the book. That's good. And you keep your sassy style all the way throughout. So that's wonderful.
I'm gonna say sassy.
Everybody Yoga is the name of the book. But tell us about, because nutrition is, I mean, again, it becomes kind of a part of the marketing around yoga. And so that's where we sort of new age-ify it. But diet is important. And you do talk about your diet, especially early on.
Oh, yeah. And I think that diet is something that, as a fat body person, as a fat pause person, body pause person, there's a lot of pressure to not really focus on food and nutrition, because there's so much stigma that comes along with being larger bodied and being promoting happiness. And people think that you're promoting obesity. And I'm like, when did I say that? or like more specifically, that you're promoting an unhealthy lifestyle. So
let me just stop right there. So the point that you're practicing this healthy practice and showing yourself in these poses in pretty much good position is a suggestion to some that you can do that, and then by extension and without any further examination, assuming that you're eating wrong or overweight, overweight. Right.
Exactly.
Because of your body, and B, that your body type is somehow your, and I'm going to put fault in quotes.
Oh, man, this is the whole thing about it, is that whenever we talk about body size, we never talk about the story behind the person. You never talk about like what what happened in that person's life, that why they are the size that they are. And in the book, I go into detail about how I gained a lot of weight when my mom was sick when I was a kid. It's not something where like, oh my God, I didn't know what to do and I didn't know how to eat. It's like, I just ate a lot. That's what happened. But it had a lot to do with the fact that my parents weren't there and we had a different family model. And as an adult, I have come to terms with this. It's something that I don't talk about this on Instagram. I don't feel like it's a conversation that needs to be had on a larger scale. But I think that people see me and they're just like, oh, so she's okay with that? She's fine with that? And then she's still just going to do this. She's going to do this yoga thing and say it's okay to be fat and do it at the same time. And it's like, so what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to say that I'm going to diet until I get down to a certain size, and then I'm going to start practicing yoga. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to start doing. No, I'm going to practice yoga now. And if you actually knew about yoga, you would know that in order to practice these postures, you can't have a cheeseburger sitting in the middle of your body. This is not a thing. Like, you can't be upside down and be like, if you are practicing, you are hydrating, you are fueling your body with the things that it needs. This doesn't mean that you're also like sweating so much and like, you know, restricting yourself to the point where you're going to be constantly losing weight. And I think that whenever people bring that argument to me, particularly because I'm so emphatic about really figuring out what healthy means to you and figuring out the fuel that you need for your body and really paying attention to where your food comes from and how you're preparing it, and that I'm so passionate about that actually in my life. And then when people bring me that, I'm just like, you don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah. You have no idea what yoga is.
Well, doesn't that, I mean, again, we make the road by walking. The fact that you mm-hmm. have become more mindful about your body and how you felt during the practice on and off the mat, and think about, you know, your hand going to your mouth, bringing that hot dog or Chick-fil-A to your lips. that's where the mindfulness about what you eat comes from, rather mm-hmm. than sort of read the book with the live willow on the front page and say, okay, I'm going to drink more coconut water and that'll make me better.
Exactly. And it has to come from, I recognize that I have this deficit in my life. I recognize that I need to be caring for myself. And I think that a lot of times we're taught that your health should be based on how other people perceive you, and that if you really want to be accepted or you want for someone to want to be intimate with you or whatever, that you will care for your body in a specific way, like you'll choose a specific path. And then sometimes you end up with people who, a really good friend of mine, Jordan Younger, she is the Balanced Blonde. If you're on Instagram, she's amazing. She is a former vegan who was really, really sick because she was not giving her body what she needed. And she moved to a non-vegan diet, but like still very balanced, she pays a lot of attention to it. But she had an insane backlash from people saying, like, you know, people were hating on her for leaving veganism. And it's like, what are you upset about here? Like, she's taking care of her body. She's eating what she needs to eat. You think that there's all this stuff tied up in the label. And it's, I think everyone needs to check their motivation.
Yeah. What has it meant to you now to have a kind of new identity around the fact that you're a celebrity over this? What does it do to you? Because, you try to stay centered and there are people telling you you're my hero.
You know what? The thing is, it's really hard for me to get a big head about anything because the Department of Revenue and the College Foundation of North Carolina and Duke Energy, they don't care about anyone talking about anything, and they keep it real with me. And so my feet are firmly planted on the ground as a result of the reality of this life that I live. And I don't take responsibility for, I feel like it's dope if people want to change their life. And if you see a photo of me and that makes you want to like go out and get this book and then like start practicing yoga, that's amazing. But that's your journey. I'm literally just trying to have my journey. I'm just trying to wake up and practice yoga every day and be true to myself. So like, we can be out here living our practices together, but I don't sit in a place of, because it's a slippery slope from saying, oh, it's awesome that people are inspired by me, and being Donald Trump. It's very slippery slope. Trying to go there.
Brilliant. Brilliant. It is always a pleasure to get a wake-up call from you, Jessamyn.
It's a pleasure to have a wake-up call from you, Frank.
Jessamyn Stanley is a yoga teacher, body positivity advocate, and the author of the book, Everybody Yoga. She's going to be at Quail Ridge Books at 7 o'clock in Raleigh tonight. Going to teach a class at Yoga Fest. at Raleigh's McKimmon Center on Saturday at 10:30. We've got that information on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a new novel that reimagines the Great Gatsby in a small town in North Carolina. Stay tuned.